So at Hamilton this year, we're looking at Mark's gospel. It's very short, it's fast moving, very action orientated. There's no birth narrative. Mark just gets straight into Jesus' life and ministry and the miracles and the controversies, although we're enjoying discovering some deeper layers. Now, Matthew and Mark basically follow the same storyline, but they add birth narratives, they deviate at times, put in new material, but they basically come back to Mark's spine. So, and Matthew is, fairly heavy on teaching with a Jewish emphasis. Luke, fairly empathetic, a fair bit on women. But all three, Matthew and Mark, look fairly similar. And they're known as the synoptic gospels, the gospels that are seen together, sort of same, same, but different. Now, who remembers, and maybe they still do it, have on the weather report on the news, the synoptic charts, where you have a variety of weather measures, rain, temperature, air pressure, and they come together in one chart called a synoptic chart, it's seen together. So we have Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the synoptic gospels that are seen together. And then we have John's gospel, which is its own category. A cursory reading will see it's very different to the other gospels. A lot of different material, about 90%. More esoteric, in the beginning was the word. And for that and other reasons, a lot of people really love it. Yes, there are some overlaps, particularly when it comes to the death and the resurrection. But it seems very different to the synoptic gospels, but complementary as well. Now, in the four gospels, and we put them together, we have what we call the I am sayings of Jesus, like I am the bread of life. Now, if I was doing this interactively with a scripture class or in my church, it's a little bit hard on Zoom the way we're set up. So you can just say this out loud, but stay muted, but say out loud. What gospel or gospels do we find the I am sayings of Jesus? Just call it out to someone next to you. You don't have to unmute, but I just want you to engage. Well, the seven I am sayings are found only in John's gospel. It's something unique about John's gospel. Now, how many I am sayings are there? Call it out to the person next to you or just say it out loud. How many are there? Two, three, eight, ten? Well, there's actually seven. Seven I am sayings. Now, again, you can call out. You'll know some of them. I am the bread of life. Say to the person next to you or say to yourself, maybe out loud. What are some of the other I am sayings of Jesus? The seven of them. I'll give you a few seconds just to think about what they are. Now, when we come to John's gospel with the seven I am sayings, a lot of them are presented in a broader context, like Jesus will do the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 bread and fish, and he says, I am the bread of life. So there's quite a context. He doesn't just say it randomly. He's often saying it within context. When he says, I'm the light of the world, he actually says that twice. One is during a festival where there's all these lights that get extinguished one by one as each day goes by. And then in darkness, Jesus says, I am the light of the world. The other time he said it was when he healed a blind man. How appropriate to then say, I am the light of the world. Where he says, I'm the good shepherd, in contrast to the bad shepherds and the leaders that the Israel nation had in the Old Testament and some of the religious leaders they had then. I'm the good shepherd, in contrast to the bad shepherd. And today, the main passage that has been read out and I'm focusing on is in the context of bringing a person back to life. It's been dead for 4 days, and Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life, in the context of bringing someone back from the dead. Now, we're all going to learn the seven I am sayings of Jesus in about 2 to 3 minutes. Now, again, normally this is pretty interactive. Not so easy with this style, but it's a fairly fun exercise. The more vividly you picture this in the mind, the more you say it out loud, you'll get it. And I may even ask someone at the end of this if they want to unmute and give a crack at saying all seven I am sayings. I'm going to give you a story. You picture it in your mind. Here we got a bread of life. The first I am saying, obviously, is Jesus. I am the bread of life. That's not hard. We're underway. These are in order. Now, just imagine that this loaf of bread flies up into the ceiling, and probably you've all got a light up there somewhere. And just imagine that it smashes the light. Maybe it's a fluorescent light and it smashes. So you've got Jesus, I am the light of the world. So we've got two now. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. Then imagine that the loaf of bread, now I've got a little doorway just over there. You might have a door nearby. Just imagine this loaf of bread crashes through the door. The next one, I am the door. So we've got, I'm the bread of life. I'm the light of the world. I am the door. And picture in your mind on the other side of that door where the bread goes through, the bread goes in and hits a shepherd. Now, you know it's a shepherd because he's holding a crook. And if you listen carefully, you can hear the sheep baying in the background. So I am the good shepherd. So we've got, I am the bread of life. Say it out loud. I'm the light of the world. I am the door. I am the good shepherd. Now, sadly, the loaf of bread hit the shepherd and knocked him out. So he's lying on the ground outside your door, and suddenly he rises up and flies through the roof. I've got a porch just out there. So the shepherd rises up and goes through the roof. I am the resurrection and the life. I'm the bread of life. I'm the light of the world. I'm the door. I'm the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. And he's gone through the roof and he's on the roof. And now I think in Victoria you have the give way signs, the sort of red upside down triangle give way. So I imagine there's a give way sign there. Way. I am the way, the truth, and the life, if you know that old song. So we've got the shepherd. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And then the shepherd just goes down into your garden just off the roof and it's full of grapes and vines. And he's having a great time eating them. I am the true vine. So we've got the resurrection and the life on the roof, the give way sign. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And I am the true vine. We got all seven. I'm the bread of life. I'm the light of the world. I'm the door. I'm the good shepherd. I'm the resurrection and the life. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. And I am the true vine. This is not compulsory. Would anyone like to just jump in and have a go at saying all seven and I can help you along with the loaf of bread? Who would like to give that a go?
Oh, James, you're good at this sort of thing.
Oh, he's been dobbed in. We need James to unmute.
Yeah, one sec. Hang on, there's a bit of noise here. There we go. I'm the bread of life. I'm the light of the world. I am, I guess, the door. Door just over here. The good shepherd gets
Very good.
bothered by the bread.
Yeah.
Then the rising up, so the resurrection and the life.
Very good.
And then the
On the
way,
roof. Yep.
yeah, the way, the truth, and the life. I sort of picture
Great.
that as a little like doing the cross. And then the vine and the branches on the vine and the earth.
Yeah, on the tree
Yeah.
on. Very good. Well done. And we'll all say it together out loud, muted. I am the bread of life. I'm the light of the world. I'm the door. I'm the good shepherd. I'm the resurrection and life. I'm the way, the truth, and life. And I am the true vine. Very well done. Now, when we come to Jesus saying, I am, whether it's whatever, the bread of life, the light of the world, the good shepherd, we've got a hyperlink, which takes us back to the Old Testament. In the New Testament, in the stories, we get these hyperlinks that take us back to the Old Testament. And often we'll miss them and we need people to point them out to you, as I did, as someone pointed out to me. And if you're familiar with all with John, Tim Mackey and the Bible Project, they do great little short YouTube videos on Bible books and themes and podcasts. He talks a lot about these hyperlinks. So when Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life, which is our main one today, or I'm the bread of life, just the I am is a hyperlink back into the Old Testament. And I'm wondering if you can think of where that comes from in the Old Testament. Moses and the burning bush. He's been called by God and Moses has got to go in front of the Pharaoh and who shall I send to me? I am the great I am. So those words I am is a hyperlink. Jesus says, I am, and whatever he says, he's going back, and this is a claim to be God. And in English, we just have I am, as John wrote it in Greek. It's actually I I am the resurrection life. It's almost as if the I is in bold. So whatever Jesus says, I am the whatever, is a claim, it's a divine claim to be God pulling in that great story of Israel's past about Moses being claimed by God in that whole Exodus event, empowered by God to do that. Now, before we come a bit more closely to the resurrection and life, there's a few other times this I am phrase is used, but the translators put in I am he just so that it makes English sense. So, for example, in John chapter 8, Jesus is in trouble again with the religious leaders, and they call him a Samaritan and demon-possessed. And then Jesus responds in time by saying, before Abraham was born, I am. Now, your translation might have I am he, but he actually says I am. He's claiming to be greater than... Now, again, hyperlink, Abraham, a link back into a great character in the Old Testament called by God. And Jesus says, before Abraham was born, I am. And they knew what he meant. They knew that he was claiming to be greater than Abraham, claiming to be God, and so they picked up rocks to stone him. They recognize the hyperlink. There's another one in John's gospel that's easy to miss, and we're fast-forwarding to John chapter 18, when Jesus is getting arrested before the crucifixion, and Judas and the soldiers are coming in to confront him and arrest him, and Jesus, sort of taking the initiative, says, "Who is it that you want?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." And most translations have Jesus saying, "I am he." In the Greek, he said, I am. It's a hyperlink back to. Now, the interesting thing that happens when he said that is that they drew back and fell to the ground. Jesus said, I am. And they fell down to the ground. It's a little bit hard to know what's going on. But it's powerful words of Jesus, supernatural perhaps, with powerful links to the past of Moses and the burning bush and the God who is I am. These are very big claims by Jesus when he uses the phrase I am and then goes on and says, I'm the bread of life, I'm the light of the world, I'm the door, I'm the good shepherd, I'm the resurrection and the life. So, He's claiming to be divine when he's saying any of these I am sayings. Now, today's main story and the reading, thanks Nathan and Liz from doing those long readings from Ezekiel as well. Appreciate that. We get I am the resurrection and the life. Now, when Nathan did a little interview with me earlier and he said, oh, Andrew, tell us a little bit about yourself. And if I said, well, I'm the resurrection and the life, you'd be thinking, whoa, who's this guy that we've got? Is he a bit full of himself? Does he have tickets on himself? This is a little bit weird. But if someone said that and soon after that raised someone from the dead, well, that would give them a bit of credibility, wouldn't it, to say that I am the resurrection and the life. So Jesus is in Bethany, just out of Jerusalem. We know from the story, it's getting very close. It's probably just a couple of weeks out from the Easter, the story. So very time, same similar time period to what we're in now. And he seemed to use Bethany as a base. New Jerusalem is often there. His good friends of Mary and Martha and Lazarus. We get them appearing in other stories and other gospels. In the north, he seemed to use Capernaum as a bit of a base here out of Jerusalem. Bethany seemed to be a place where he could be at home with these friends of his. And a few things he says is, this sickness will not end in death. No, it's for God's glory so that God's son may be glorified through it. Now, Lazarus had been dead for 4 days. There has been found a little writing about a Jewish belief a fair bit of time after this, that they believe that a soul tried to re-enter the body for 3 days, and after that, that was it. The person was really dead. Now, I don't want to overstate this, but maybe there's just a little bit more significance in the fact that Jesus had been dead for 4 days. But Jesus said to Martha, your brother will rise again. And Martha said, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. And Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. and everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? And Martha said, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. And John tells us, he writes his gospel, these things are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you might have life in his name. And Martha got it, even before he was resurrected. We get this very short verse, which in the version Nathan read, I think might have been three words. So we get Jesus wept. I think it also might have been Jesus was weeping or something like that. Shortest verse in the Bible. Human emotion, Jesus is weeping. Is he weeping because his friend Lazarus is dead? Possibly a friend. Is he weeping at death in general and the devastation that it brings? Just in this passage, a couple of times, Jesus is deeply moved. Some translations will say he was angry. It's a strong emotion, perhaps like a horse snorting. So there's something really going on here for Jesus about the loss of a friend or about death or the impact of death. But he's about to provide a complete game changer. And remarkable scenes with authority, Jesus says, Lazarus, come out. And I mean, it's just hard to imagine that would be like with people there watching as Lazarus comes out after being dead for 4 days. It's quite a remarkable thing to think about what it looked like. So Jesus brings Lazarus back to death, a life. And the irony is in the very next scene, which we didn't have read out, is that they plot to kill Jesus. Oh, what are you going to do? This guy just brought someone for life. Well, let's kill him. And ultimately they do not too long after this. So this is a miracle. It's the big one, the most dramatic and provocative miracle in this gospel and probably the other gospels. But it's also more. It's also Jesus about to conquer death himself. Now, Lazarus would have died again, died twice, not so Jesus. But this is where we're heading in the gospel for the death of Jesus. He brings Lazarus back to life. That's a miracle. That's good for Lazarus and his family. But it's a sign of the future also. And he's also preparing for his own death, which is not too far away. I am, hyperlink, I am the resurrection and the life. Lazarus comes back from the dead to authenticate Jesus' credibility in saying that. The valley of the dry bones in Ezekiel. Now, Old Testament prophets are notoriously hard to understand. There's 17 of them, 5 major, 12 minor. They're only major by size. And with 48 chapters in our Bible, we have our chapter divisions, Ezekiel ranks as a major. But I think he's probably pretty highly neglected. We tend to avoid, there's lots of symbolism and complicated things. There's visions of God's chariots, of creatures with multiple faces, of wheels within wheels. There's the siege of Jerusalem. We have Ezekiel lying down on one side of his body for many days and then on another. Then he's cooking food over unusual fuel, which is human excrement. There's symbolism and there's all sorts of strange things going on. There's a parable of a vine and an eagle. And we get the valley of the dry bones and a bit later, a new temple, a vision of a new temple. And the valley of the dry bones and probably other ones there show that God is present and powerful and that his judgment is real. Now, a clue or a tool to unlocking the prophets is to know who the prophet's addressing and the time period. So Old Testament story, we've got Old Testament, we've got Joseph in Egypt. They're in there as slaves for 400 years, exile, Moses again, burning bush, the Red Sea crossing, the wilderness for 40 years, the conquering and the setting up of the promised land. Then they get the kings and the temple and Jerusalem. Then they have a civil war. The northern kingdom goes into exile in Assyria. It gets scattered by the Assyrians. Those left in Jerusalem, eventually the temple gets destroyed and they get taken over to Babylon and they're in exile for roughly 70 years or so and they return or rebuild. Now, if you have a prophet before the exile, like Micah, it's probably a warning about ongoing disobedience and look out for what's coming. If it's a prophet during the exile, like Daniel, it's probably saying you are where you are because of your sin, But hang in there. You're in a bad way, but God is working and has a future for you. I don't think that was a sin in Daniel's case, though. If it's after the exile, the prophet is probably talking about rebuilding and the immediate future, like for Malachi. So where does Ezekiel fit? He is an exilic prophet. He's an exile himself, kicked out of Jerusalem, in exile in Babylon, and they're having a crisis of faith. There's no land, there's no temple, there's no king, their identity's gone, the promises seem lost, they're probably having a faith crisis. And here's a vision from God, which he wrote down to give to these people in exile, in another country, in a faith crisis with all these things that are lost. So that's who he's directing it to. So knowing that, the prophets and the history sort of mesh like two cogs, and suddenly the vision of the dry bones coming to life makes sense historically, but also figuratively. So in the valley of the dry bones, represents the people of God in exile. They're spiritually dead. They're cut off from their land. But God tells Ezekiel that he will bring the bones back together. He will give them flesh and breath and restore them to life. This is a promise that Israel, you will be restored and brought back from exile and established as a nation. The return of the Babylonian exile. So at its core, a nation seems completely dead, but can be brought back to life. And so this vision of the dry bones coming to life with tendons and things, and then the breath of life being breathed in, perhaps reminiscent of the creation stories of God breathing into the creatures he made that came to life, the first humans. We get a picture of spiritual renewal, that life is not lifeless and hopeless. There is no situation too far gone for restoration. So in short, the valley of the dry bones symbolizes hope, restoration, and new life. First for exiled Israel, but for any situation, I guess it seems beyond recovery. And I'll just read that final verse from the passage, which I think was a better version that Margie read out, the very Romans 8. If the Spirit of God who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, he who raised Christ Jesus from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through his Spirit who dwells in you. So taking all of that, the Old Testament in the time of Jesus and in the Christian era where the Spirit indwells all Christians, the same God is working powerfully in us, who gave exiled nation of Israel hope in their tumultuous history and who brought them back, who raised Lazarus from the dead, who raised Jesus from the dead. This God is working for us and certainly has a future and for them and also for us. And in a sense, our context is where we're moving into communion with the I am the bread of life, might be a thought that we might take, but leading into Easter, I am the resurrection and the life. One more time. Here we go. I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the door. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. And I am the true vine. The bread of life, as we head into communion shortly and heading into Easter for all of us individually and corporate, I am the resurrection and the life.